are all here. I'm glad everyone made it out tonight. And first off, I want to thank everyone for coming out. This is a pretty good turnout. This is my first Searle Lab podcast panel. So did not know what to expect. So I have to say that I'm happy to see all these faces in here. Can't lie, I'm a little nervous. But, you know, I have friends and family in the room, so. The podcast is called Searle Lab Podcast. So Searle is actually a French word, and it means sister in French. And the reason that I decided to call it that is because I'm half Haitian, and French is one of the languages of Haiti. I don't know if there's any Haitians in the room. Okay, I know we're everywhere, so I knew there had to be a few. So I thought that that was just a nice twist. And second, this idea to launch this podcast came out of a brainstorming session that I had with my actual sister, who is an amazing creative and who's here. So that just felt fitting. And lastly, this podcast is really about fostering sisterhood amongst creatives, women in the creative community. I really strongly believe that the more that we support each other and the more that we share information with one another, the better equipped we will be. So there's an educational element to this. And so I will tell you a little bit about myself. I am a music executive, and I've been working directly with talent for many years now as an A&R and as an artist development. And meaning that I'm closely involved in the music production process and in the storytelling of artists. And so what sparked my interest in learning about people behind the scenes is I just was always that person coming up who was reading the credits. I always wanted to know who everyone was, who was making it happen, what all the roles were, whether it was the producers, the songwriters, the stylists. I wanted to know. I was nosy. I was curious. I wanted to know who the cousins were, the thank yous. So that was me. And so, because if you really think about it, you have creatives and they're bringing their talent and their point of view into their work. And their work is being felt, seen, heard, experienced on the world stage. And so they essentially are the ones who are creating the trends and shaping the culture that we are consuming on a mass level. So that's who, these are all the people who are sitting here today. And so I think these women should get highlighted more. Number one, because I think it's important for people to know that these jobs exist, first and foremost. And second, because these are careers that are not, they're unconventional, and there's often not a blueprint. And so I think one of the best ways to learn about pursuing a career like this is by hearing about other journeys. And so I think that is often very helpful. So that's what I hope to accomplish with this podcast and with these panels that I'll be holding. So we're just gonna jump into it because we wanna hear from the ladies that I'm talking about. Oh, and the other reason is I want people to know who they are, these badass women that we have here. So that's another reason why I'm holding these podcasts. All right, so I'm gonna start off by letting you know all of who's here. So I'm gonna start off with KJ. I'm gonna introduce KJ. So KJ Rose. KJ is known throughout the entertainment industry as the ultimate talent whisperer, performance director, hype coach, and energy purveyor, which you'll probably catch on to pretty soon, you'll see. She is an amazing artist development expert. She has worked with the likes of Lil Nas X, Sweetie, Nas, so she's worked with both Nas's, little and big, Polo G, the Lumineers, and the list goes on. And on top of all of this, she has had time to write a book, and the book is called The Rose Effect. So welcome, Rose, KJ.
Thank you, Nicole.
Okay, so next we have Dominique Dawson, who is a costume designer. Dominique has been in the industry for going on 15 years now. Throughout her career, she has worked with an array of incredible talent from the likes of Alicia Keys, Viola Davis, Ava DuVernay, Donald Glover, and more. And she has worked on shows that many of you are likely familiar with, such as the comedy, drama, and thriller Swarm. I don't know, are you familiar? Okay. Written and created by Donald Glover, starring Dominique Fishback, Chloe Bailey, Damson Idris, and more. And it has been nominated for a total of 3 Emmys this year. Yes, yeah, so congratulations. That's amazing. And I've actually known Dominique for many years now, so it's great to see where you are. I have a story for a couple of folks here. We've worked together in the past. And she is also the costume designer for the film Colin in Black and White, produced by Ava DuVernay about Colin Kaepernick, and also the DC comic film DMZ featuring Rosario Dawson, and many other things. Then we have this incredible production duo. Okay, they are the reason why we're emptying our bank accounts, guys, okay? So I'm gonna tell you why in a minute. So I'm super excited to introduce our next guest. If you're not already familiar, you'll be excited as well when I tell you more about them. They are a Grammy-winning production duo that go by the name Nova Wave. They have produced for the likes of Rihanna, Jasmine Sullivan, DJ Khaled, Sweetie, Nicki Minaj, Jay-Z, Ariana Grande, and Beyonce. Yes, the B word. They co-wrote 8 out of 16 songs on one of the biggest, most brilliant albums of our generation, Renaissance. Incredible, okay? That's why I told you. Yes, okay, so... And they are killing it in what has been a traditionally male-dominated space, which we should definitely applaud them for. So welcome to the panel, Blue and Chi. And lastly, we have Michelle Parker, who is a music video director from California, who burst onto the scene in recent years. And to date, she has brought her lens to the likes of Wiz Khalifa, Young Thug, Cardi B, Coi Leray, and Wale, to name a few. Again, not a path that's easy for women to pursue, so we are really looking forward to hearing her story. All right, so we are just gonna jump right into it because I think I've done enough talking. So I wanna start off by just asking, and anyone can take this. Well, let's just go in order. So can you describe what it is you do? And we can start with you ladies. Is it working?
It's on. Okay. The mic is working. Again, I'm Chi, one half of Nova Wave. We are a songwriting and production duo. So we write songs and we make tracks. And honestly, I really feel like we're angels of the music industry, right? So kind of what we really, really focus on is going in, figuring out what the artist really needs, what they really want, the message that they're trying to convey, and we wrap that up in a bow. We make it sound good. And yeah, so that's what we do.
Yeah, you described it perfectly, so.
All right, and Michelle, can you describe what you do?
Yes, so similar visually when it comes to music videos or any production, I am in charge of everything you see on the screen. So the storyline that's being told, making sure it's visually, aesthetically what it's supposed to be. A lot of times that is collaborating heavily with the artists, but if they allow you the freedom, pretty much everything that you see, from the, you know, having a touch on the clothing to the lighting to everything it needs to be in order to make the story or the song complete and a complete vibe.
Amazing.
I'm Dominique, and I'm a costume designer, but I'm a creative director and storyteller. So as a costume designer, I pretty much utilize clothing as an extension of helping that actor achieve their objective. So I'm really looking at how the clothes can service what they want. So that is connected to color, texture, fit, all of that.
KJ.
Hi, I'm KJ Rose. Again, my role is as a creative and executive performance director. I often say that my sweet spot is to help you get out of the blocks from a cold start. I always run the first leg, and then I pass the baton to whoever else needs to help the artist. Often, when artists come to me, they at this point, they've been signed either based on data, but never based on performances. And so my job is to help them understand their story and tell it in a way that it cannot be hijacked. So often people, I think, confuse me with vocal coaches. I say vocal coaches deal with the instrument, I deal with the behavior, choreographers give you the A count, and then I make the A count count. And there it is.
See, this is a dream team right here. Could you imagine everyone coming together? They're all storytellers in their own right, and this is what artists need, you know, or any sort of presentation of any kind. You need this kind of a team in place. So this is amazing. So when did you, next question, when did you make the decision to pursue this career path? And what were the first steps you took in this direction? Do you want to go?
Sure. Decisions in this career path. A little spotty here. Okay, so I didn't grow up listening to music, actually. I grew up on a farm. I didn't have cable. And so I kind of say that music found me. I was in band, but I would say maybe professionally, I interned at Grand Hustle for free. I would definitely say go and intern somewhere when you're younger, for sure, and learn for free. It really, really helped me out. But that was around 2006, and so I went to school for marketing, but again, I interned, and so that was my level of, hey, maybe I can really do this. And you want to answer the second part of the question?
What was the second part? I'm sorry.
So when did you make the decision to pursue this career path, and what were the first steps you took in that direction?
Oh, okay, so I would say the first steps I took, I moved from Tallahassee, Florida. I moved from Tallahassee to Atlanta with Chi. And I don't know, she was like, you know, you should, we met like a couple years prior, maybe like 2 years prior to me moving, but she was like, you should just quit your job and just, I was rooted in Tallahassee. Like I was engaged to be married. Like I had my life set, you know, I had a career path. And she was like, just stop everything. If you move to Atlanta and we're gonna be big. So around like 2011, I made a decision to just, you know, quit my job and basically quit everything. And I moved to Atlanta, and that was the transition that I think catapulted us. That's what I needed that. I needed to just, like, you know, leap. So, yeah, that's when everything happened for us around 2011.
Yeah, so I asked this because these are all very uncertain paths. It's not like you're enrolling in a class or you've accepted a job that somebody's hired you for. You're really taking that leap and you're betting on yourself. So once you make that decision, to me, that's such a big deal. Just committing and saying, this is what I'm gonna do. And you don't know what's ahead of you necessarily. So I'm always interested in hearing about when that moment happened, you know, when you said, this is it, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So Michelle, you're next.
For me, I took a class that was offered, an elective class in high school for video production. And I went with no intention of taking it seriously. It's an easy A, that class that I took, but it was love at first sight. I loved everything about the class. I was super into it. And you feel it when you find something. So same, I encourage people, if there is anything free, internship, as you brought up, something that you can sign up for. If you don't know what you're into and you have the time, just try it because you never know. And from there, it took me some time. I didn't jump into it immediately. From kind of a small town in the Bay Area, so nobody was super supportive of that idea of me just going into video production. But after a while, it was eating at me. I knew that's what I wanted to do. And similar to what you're saying, I had to move. I had to come to LA. I had to leave where I was at, the environment I was at. And that really, you know, when you take yourself out of your comfort zone and put yourself in a new space with a goal in mind, that definitely helped me take it to the next level.
Nice. Okay.
Dominique. I pretty much grew up like surrounded by the arts. My mom was a stylist at first, and then she moved into casting, and so in San Francisco, Bay. so yeah, like I was always either acting or dancing or doing something in the arts, and so it really just came naturally to me, and my parents were super supportive of it, which is very rare, and I know I'm super lucky in that way. But I pretty much knew when I went to college that I would go in this kind of directing track. I went into school as an actor, but I wanted to explore all of the different facets of the business, and the studio that I went to at NYU allowed me to do that. So, you know, I kind of got to taste a little bit of each role, and now we're here. Yeah.
Shout out to our alma mater.
Yeah.
NYU.
Yay!
There's some other NYU folks here. Yes. KJ.
This was not the plan. Okay. So growing up south side of Chicago, enjoyed singing. So singing was my first love. But I had a stage fright that was very debilitating. But I worked it out when I went to FAMU, hence Tallahassee. And so moved to New York and just started singing background for a lot of people. So I know there's another question, but my break was singing background for like Heavy and Biggie. I'm dating myself, I was like 10. like A plus AZ, Capone Noriega, Dead Prez, but it still allowed me to be kind of behind the scenes. And then I got an offer to tour with Puff. Kelly Price was like, you ready to go on tour? We meet 1 week, the next week she said, can you go on tour with Puff? So I sing background for a Puff, and then it goes on Carl Thomas and then Britney Spears. And I just thought that now I'm prepared to sing and to have a solo career. So I went to work for Clive Davis at J Records so I could work on my own thing, because nobody's paying you to do your own thing when you're on the road. And so during that time, I would take the initiative to go into all the A&R's offices and play my music and get feedback from them. And they're like, yeah. I was like, okay, let me keep going. And so I really got to a point where I put out my own music. I stopped asking everybody else for their validation in it. And I did a promo tour. I didn't have the same resources that are available now. And so afterwards, I was like, I think I did it. And I didn't know what was next, but I felt like there was more. And then executives at J Records said, can you come and just, while I was there, they wanted me to, I thought the call was to give me a record deal, but the call was to help their artist. So it was kind of like this moment where I was like, am I now coaching and helping people with stage presence and confidence in lieu of something not working? Or is this the natural progression? Because I can be this and this. And so, I mean, because otherwise you're just a bitter coach. You're like, I would do it like this. And so I had to work that out myself. And then I decided that the talent was the singing and the assignment was the performance coaching, right? Because I can't tell you how it feels to perform in front of thousands if I've never done it. So that was what helped people to trust what I was doing. And so moving in that direction, I formed a business called The Rose Effect, and then it became more word of mouth in terms of artists that I began to work with. Did I answer every question? Yes. What was the last one?
You did.
Okay.
You
okay.
did, for sure. By the way, I don't know if everyone picked up on this, but the word internship came up a couple of times, and I definitely agree that interning is valuable. And I think that there've been different thoughts on interning amongst the younger generation. And it's, do you see where it's gotten people? I mean, you are basically offering to help people, and you're putting yourself in spaces that you probably wouldn't normally be able to access, and you're learning as you go. And these are all jobs that it's not just about your craft, it's very much about knowing how being in the spaces and seeing how people are interacting with each other, and you know, seeing how relationships work and things like that. A lot of intangibles. So I think that that's just me advocating for internships because I think they still matter. And I know people want to get paid, but I think it's just important to be there. You're going to get paid in what you're learning. So.
Yeah, I'll add on to that. A lot of times money is the lowest form of abundance. So,
amen.
Yes, 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 yes. And being of service, even when you talk about in spiritual life, being of service, that's what God says is the highest form of the kingdom. And so you have to humble yourself and be of service. And when you do that and you actually love what you're doing, it will always work out.
Yes. Definitely. Okay, so my next question. So what scenario have you been in that you felt, or what scenario do you feel was most educational in terms of, like, it helped you develop your craft, like being in a certain setting or being mentored by someone or whatever it happened to be, but it really, you felt that that opportunity really helped you to grow and learn and develop your craft?
I would say me personally, okay, so we write and produce records, right? And so a lot of times people would just call us just to write records. And so it was very frustrating in our career, but at the same time, we got to go around and see the top people in the industry and hear what they were producing. And so a lot of times it was frustrating, but at the same time, we learned a lot. We learned, I even remember how even we met B was somebody canceled on Hit-Boy. And they were like, yeah, come in and write with Hit-Boy for you know, B and J, et cetera, et cetera. And I just remember his creativity level. He wasn't bound by what was going on in the industry, and I feel like that was a very pivotal moment of, hey, I can just be as creative as I want to be. And now, you know, when we talk about B, we feel like, oh, we can send her anything. We can be as creative as we want to be. She's not going to shut it down. And I feel like that moment was just very, it was very educational for me. Wow.
That's a great education. And the great thing is you were there in your career because you've been doing it for a while. So you were ready for this opportunity. So that always, sometimes that just happens. It just aligns in that way after you've put in a certain amount of time. And then the opportunity comes along and you're like, all right, I'm ready. Yeah. So, Michelle.
Yeah, a lot of the hard times are the most educational. The no's, the things you did wrong, those, whatever wrong means, those tend to stick out in your brain a little bit more and leave an imprint that you know, you learn from that more than when everything is going great or how it's supposed to. So there's been plenty of times where I had to learn similar, you know, that this is a collaborative project. You know, everybody's input is very important. Everybody is here together for one goal. So there's a lot of times where I want what I want or just me. And you do have to fight for your vision. But I think it's important to, you know, keep in mind everybody, there's an artist here that has worked very hard through their career, you know, that's a part of this visual. There's label people who have been here for many years who have a, you know, a say as well. So definitely I think the harder times left an impression, but you always take that and make it a positive. You learn from it, you make yourself better, learn how to maneuver a little bit. As someone who, again, came in with not really, I didn't have a mentor, I didn't have anyone to really guide me. But those times, for sure, straightened me up and helped me a lot.
I would say probably working for two different women. I worked as an intern for Bonnie Timmerman, who was like a huge casting director in New York. She did a lot of Michael Mann stuff. And then also Pamela Love, she has her own jewelry company, and I did all editorial fashion styling with her. And I think by watching those two women multitask between so many different roles, you know, Bonnie was not only a casting director, but she would get producer credits on everything because she was so key in sculpting the film and the tone and the vibe of the cast, you know? And it was just a trickle down from there with the vision. And same with Pamela, like she was amazing with New York Fashion editorial, never put herself in a box. She did so many different styles of looks and spreads. And then she simultaneously was building this brand. And you know what I mean? I started out working at Urban Outfitters with her. Then I went to Barney's with her. Then I went to, you know what I mean? I saw her open her own business. So I think that watching those women has really encouraged me to just embrace who I am as a multifaceted artist, you know, and just roll with it and not have to be like, I'm one thing, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
That's important.
I would say...
No, you're
two
next.
Things. One, when I was singing, I got booed at the Apollo. I got my stripes. But I know why I got booed. I mean, it was a pivotal moment for me. The lady after me had a busload of people. I didn't get the memo. So all her, they thought she was the only competition. So all her people yelled for her and they booed me. But in that moment, I had to figure out who was in control of what the rest of my life looked like. Was I gonna make a decision based on this moment? Or was I gonna use it as fuel? And I decided to use it as fuel. But someone that had stage fright that decided that they were gonna get on Apollo, that was a moment that I really, anyway, I survived. I would say the second moment for me was being on set of a commercial and it was Lil Nas and Elton John, right? And so I gave Lil Nas a note and then Elton was like, well, what do I do next? And I was like, I mean, I looked around for the director and I didn't see him. But I had watched and I was like, he was looking right at me. I was like, well, you know, you've done this and then after you do this, then you'll say this. And then the director comes over and he puts his arm out and he was like, you're great, but I'm directing this. And so I was like, ooh, okay, how you feel? What Kiana's what my mama named me. I was like, Kiana, how you feel? You gonna be KJ, you gonna be Kiana. And so I said to myself, you can step back, but don't step out. He is the director. You were just, I'm never gonna tell Elton I don't know. So I sat back and then it happened again. I think the director walked off and he said, what do I do next? So then I called the director, I said, da-da-da. And he told Elton, he was like, this time, you know, you'll do it the same thing again, but you'll do it slowly. And then Elton was like, well, that's effing annoying. I could have done that 10 minutes ago. And then I was like, well, we've all been humbled here, I believe. And so I sat back, and in that moment, you know, I realized, like even the next day, they said to, somebody said to Lil Nas, you know, they were doing dialogue back and forth, and he was like, oh, you look amazing. No, you look amazing. And he was like, now you're gonna tell Lil Nas he looks like a chicken. I was like, hey, I think I heard CH. That's not what we're doing. And in that moment, I realized it was advocacy. And a lot of times, it's just me, only black woman in the room, and the trepidation of like speaking out and the ridicule of me, of them thinking that I am wasting money at this point. And so, you know, in that moment, I realized that advocacy was my biggest role in those rooms. And that really helped me to develop and to be, you know, loud when needed, because it's not for me. If it was just for me, I'd be like, I mean, well, I see. But knowing on my watch, if it happens to someone else, I can't let them go down like that. And so that was probably one of my biggest moments.
Yeah. I think it's often when, I think those uncomfortable moments are always the teaching moments. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the moments that we remember well.
And one more thing, I'm sorry, I touched you. I was gonna say that before I was a performance coach, like I always just, because I have no rubric on how to, you know, measure when I should give myself a promotion, right? It's not corporate America. And so in the room, by the end of the night, you know, I just held my ground with the director. By the end of the night, he said, can we get an Apple box for me and my accomplice slash co-director? And I was like, ooh, he said it. And I took it and I ran. And then that's when I gave myself the promotion of performance director. So it was just in the moment where it felt awkward, still trying to catch the wind, you know, from it. So that's my title, my new
title. Yes.
Amazing.
Okay, so that takes us to our next question.
Before you go, yes. I had this thought the other day, going back to what you said, but I was thinking about how God listens to prayers, but he respects action. He Amen. Respects action. You have to be in action when you're in these rooms. You have to do that. That's when the blessings come.
Absolutely.
Amen.
Absolutely. Even if sometimes that means that you're just listening and yes. and understanding what the room needs, taking in what the room needs and where and how you need to show up. But even that is being active, you know?
A lot of times, even when we're in with artists, we're like, hey, this is about you. We're just here to fill in the gaps. However you need us to do that, like, we can come in here, you can write the whole song, you can produce it, you can do whatever. It'd be great if you know, we do kind of know what we're doing, though, you know? But this is, again, being of service is big.
Okay, so that takes us to the next question. So your roles require that you develop trusting relationships with your clients as you help bring their vision to life. What's the approach that you have to working with your artists, talent, your clients that makes them feel comfortable working with you? What role does trust play in your work?
To the first part. I just think that in a temperature where people like to be heard, I think we just listen. And I think that, like with the artists, they just have a lot to say. So when they feel like, okay, cool, you know, I can tell you this, I can tell you things. And it's like artists we've worked with that have shared some things with us they've never shared with their family members. And you got to think over a 10-plus, you know, career, and never hearing those things again, I think that speaks for itself. You know, so I think that we just go in and just, we're ourselves. We pray for the artists, we pray with the artists. And we just show up as Noble Wave, and I think it just works. And I think people just can feel that synergy. Yes. Yeah, you want the second part?
What's the second part? I think you covered it, though.
Yeah.
I think she covered it, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. It was a good question.
What role does trust play in your work?
Good. That's good.
Man, I mean, honestly, with us,
we sign a lot of NDAs. So
we sign a lot of NDAs. But honestly, people, I don't know, they just get it when they see us. They get it. They can feel the energy. They literally can feel it. They don't have to question it. I don't know an artist that questions us. I really don't, to be honest with you. Again, even all of the people that are playing on that board, like literally they tell us their secrets and we know how to take that, shape it in a way, and it's like, okay, this is in your record, but we covered you, like, wow. Like
that
literally
says so much. That's when you can get the best out of the person you're working with.
But it's a two-way thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have to trust them as well.
Absolutely.
That
yeah,
you know, so
yep. The synergy and chemistry. Yeah. Michelle.
Yeah, when you say that, a lot of it makes me think about trusting in it yourself. Because so many times you hear, in my job at least, I'm constantly submitting ideas, constantly trying to, you know, book the next thing or whatever the case may be, and it will make you lose trust in your own vision. Like, am I doing something wrong? Do I need to change something? And I think the artist feels that when you have the confidence in yourself and you trust yourself that you're here, you know, for the benefit of all of us, we're just here to get the best product possible. We are here to get a specific vision into the world. I think that is the first and foremost trust that is the most important. Don't ever lose the trust in yourself and in your confidence and in what you came to do, because it is easy to do that when you're constantly, you know, fighting a battle, an uphill battle.
Yes, amen.
I love that.
To that.
I love that. So important. Yes.
For me, I mean, I'm just like a lover by nature, right? I'm bubbly. I can't help it. I'm just silly. And so I try to just embrace that and be that for them, right? So when we're in fittings, it's so intimate, you know what I mean? And I think that authenticity helps to have them let their guard down and like begin to trust me. And then when you follow that up with, hey, I've done as much work as you have on this script, you know, of really dissecting this and figuring out, like, what, how do these dots connect, and what is this character after? They love that. But I've been able to have pretty good luck with talent. I think that I'm, one thing I'm still working on is trust with the people that you work with, right? Like, I can't be there every minute of the day with all of the fittings that are going on and all of the shooting, if you have multiple units and all that. And so I make it a point to, like, interview everybody myself. You know what I mean? Like, I want to catch a vibe on what their energy is. And I want to get to the place where I don't have to do that. You know, and I want, so I think I'm still working on that, and I think that's okay, you know, because I want to advance just for myself and be confident in the work we've done and let the team take it, you know, and like, so that's so key.
When you say the people you work with, I just wanted to make it clear, so you mean your team?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure.
Because there's so many people that work in the costume department. It's me plus 25 or 30 at times, you know, depending on the job. So that is my biggest thing. And there's different levels of, you know, I've worked with this person on 7 million jobs, so we cool. But who is this? And we just got to a new city. Who are you? You know, like, how do I trust you? You know? So I'm working on that.
To piggyback on what she said, I think in terms of covering your artist, for me, the trust begins with, like, praying on every set, like, before they get to the room, praying on the atmosphere, so that they come in knowing that everybody in the room wants them to win. A lot of times when I show up in studio with artists, they automatically think something is wrong, right? Because if you have been doing what you do for all of this time, then why do I now need a performance coach? And so I am constantly disarming artists to say, if I'm here, that means that they've invested in you. And my job is to not give you anything that you don't already possess. My job is to push you beyond your perceived capacity. And help. I think it helps them to know that I'm also an artist. And the role is that we both leave here with something that gives you a lift in some way. Like, oftentimes I say, I don't walk in the room waiting to access your energy. I've got to bring my own. And that's what I really push for them as well. And so I think that the trust begins with them understanding that I relate to what you do. You know, I see you. I'm not trying to, it doesn't matter what I did yesterday, who I worked with yesterday. You are your own thing. I want to customize this for you. I don't talk about other artists when I'm in the room with them. I just get to the heart of what their matter is and help them push so that they can tell a story that is compelling every time they get on stage, that they have a stage presence that allows them to be vulnerable in the space. And that first starts with my own vulnerability. And then that's when the trust begins.
So many great points came up, right? I think trusting yourself is so major, especially when you're working with multiple parties and there's lots of people invested in what it is you're doing. So there's a lot of perspectives and opinions coming into play, and still being able to drive your own vision forward can be a bit of a challenge, but it's also part of what it entails, right? So really learning how to navigate that is not easy, but yeah, I love that point. Okay, so the next question is, have you had mentors, and what did you learn from them, if so?
We haven't had mentors.
I hear this so much.
Yeah, I don't know, and it's so strange. I mean, we've had people come in and impart wisdom and, you know, but not really anybody to hold us by the hand. And I think that's just what made us go so hard. So that's why now it's like, we want to be those people for somebody. So we always looking for people that we can, you know, mentor and, you know, just give gems and nuggets, but we didn't.
Yeah, and I think sometimes when we spend a hair of amount of a time with these artists, that is a little bit of mentorship. I remember one time when we met Jay-Z, and I had on a hat, and I took my hat off because we were recording. I have to have my earphones on. And so they called us in a different room, and they were like, yo, like, come in here with Jay, da-da-da-da. And the first thing he said was, he was like, where's your hat? He was like, stay consistent. You know what I mean? And so it doesn't mentorship is not necessarily, oh, I got to spend 6 months with this person. It's literally, if I get 5 minutes in the room, what am I going to do with that 5 minutes? Like, God's timing is not our timing. Right. So, yeah.
And I know what you mentioned before that you didn't, but what? Tell me.
Yeah, specifically when it comes to directors, I've had to research, watch every interview, look up their journey, every information they've been able to give. I've been fortunate, you know, down the path, it's so crazy how things work, to be in the same rooms with them or meet them later, people that you thought were unattainable or, you know, that you actually look up to. But a lot of specifically directors I had to follow, you know, through doing my own research and hard work to see, you know, how they got to where they are. I have been fortunate to have other people, you know, sometimes we think, oh, it has to be another director, but it could be in this field, a producer, someone else in the industry that's similar in the same realm you are that can help you. And I've had a lot of different producers, EPs, who I still work with to this day, who have helped me a lot and given me information that no one else would have given me. So I think that helps too, to redirect your, don't be just so focused on it has to be the person who's doing the exact same thing as me. It could be someone who works with them or in that same, like I said, realm that can help you as well.
I kind of have two. I worked with a designer named Valerie Adams, and she started out on 227. So that was, she's been in the game for a long time. She's done everything from like In Living Color, Martin, all kinds of stuff. But just being able to be in her world, I lived with her at a time. I saw how she juggled having a son, having a daughter, having a divorce, eventually retiring now, and just watching that journey and how her spirit stayed the same the whole time. Like the way she made jokes, the way she loved to gab on the phone, and she stayed her and happy and present, and she didn't let the stress of the industry make her decisions, right? And then, so that helped. I think she did that just subconsciously to me. But then there's a producer named Gary Lennon who, you know, he's done like the Power series and all 50 Cent world. But he saw one of my early things that I did that was a small web series, American Coco. And as soon as he saw that, he reached out to me and was like, are you represented? Like, I want to help you get a rep, which no one, especially a white man, has ever done that to me before. So it was so, I don't want to say validating, but it was encouraging that he saw the work that I put in and he helped me. You know what I mean? Now, I will say that when I eventually got to that place of pursuing those reps, they were kind of like, we have our black designer. You know what I mean? And so I dealt with that for a little bit. But eventually, you just keep working. You just keep on pitching yourself, and now I'm repped, so it's all good. It's all gravy. But I think, yeah, he's, sometimes you just having that one connection, yeah, like, really means a lot. Yeah.
I would say the longest standing mentor has been my god sister. Her name is Cynthia Johnson. She was at Columbia when Destiny's Child got signed. And so she, I think being in Chicago where it's very pragmatic, like,
If I lived in New York, I would have seen the arts. I would have known that that was attainable. But being in Chicago, you go to grammar school, you go to high school, go to college, you get a job, and then you come back home. And so I never knew that this could be part of my trajectory. But she gave me that. And then moving on at FAMU was my soror, Indy Brown. She mentored my spirit a lot. And then my producers in the industry, from No ID to Big John Platt, he's not a producer, executive, but he was the first to really challenge me when I was at FAMU, and all the friends were like, oh, she's a singer, and he was like, well, sing some. I was like, no, I ain't no clown, I don't just sing on the spot. That was the stage fright talking, and then he was like, well, I leave tomorrow. I was like, yeah, I'm dying. And so from that point on, he put me with my first management team. And then, you know, fast forward, it became, you know, people that took the time to drop just gems of encouragement, from Ben Vereen to Frank Gatson to Lorianne Gibson, because I'm not a choreographer, but those people saw something in me in terms of my own stage presence and energy that really poured and allowed me the space to grow and to call whenever I needed.
Yeah, I think that often mentors, they're not always assigned to you. I totally agree. I think sometimes it's just picking up information as you go, or sometimes people will just say something that just sticks to you. You know, it just lands, and it's what you need to hear at that time, and you take it with you, and you still keep referring back to it. I know I definitely have those moments. I can't say I had one mentor, but that's why I wanted to do this podcast, because I noticed just with myself, when I listen to other people and I listen to their journeys, I've always cared about the story. That's information. That's the education, where the education happens, is hearing other people talk about their path, you know? So that's in a way that's mentorship, in a way. You know what I mean? A form of mentorship. So
can I say one more thing, Nicole?
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's really, I think, advantageous to create your own kind of executive board. Some might be voluntary, some are involuntary. Like Clive Davis was a mentor, but he didn't know it. You know what I mean? So it's just like, you know, I was able to pull from him. But I think creating your own executive board of people that you can go to whenever you feel like you're in this quandary, or you just are at a crossroads, that can give you some form of information that can shift your perspective. People that don't think like you, like diversify thought at all times. And I need to add, like, Sean Glover, in case this is recorded. Sean Glover and Mark Byers are also on my executive board.
Yes, I agree with that 100%. I actually have several members of my executive board in this room tonight, so I agree. So my next question is, what, and I think you probably have so many answers to this, because you guys have all accomplished so much, but what is something career-wise that you've accomplished that you are the most proud of?
Oh, gotta go with the Grammy.
Okay. Okay.
The Grammy, with, you know, arguably the greatest of all time, King B herself. I gotta say that one, because usually we had this thing before where we'd have these accomplishments and she'd be like, "You ain't really like that excited." I'm like, "Okay, cool. Yeah, like it's cool. Like this is cool, but I feel like." Winning the Grammy would be, I feel like that was the one that kind of knocked me like, okay, God, what's up?
You don't play about us, huh?
This is what we doing, you know? And then on top of that, Cuff It, I think it was her longest running song on Billboard ever. And I was like, nah, God, you different. You're different. You're different. And to really be the core of that. For the core of that to come from us. I mean, a true blessing.
Yeah.
True blessing.
Yeah. Cultural moment. Yeah. Culturally shifting. Yeah, for sure. Not even a moment, like a shift. Yes. Michelle.
I have so many goals. I feel like I have so many things.
It's really hard to narrow down, but
that I still want to.
This is, you know, your time to brag a little bit.
So. That I still want to achieve. I'm fortunate to work with a lot of new artists who are just coming into the game, super moldable, always humble. So when I do, you know, get a chance to work with bigger artists that my mom would know or my friends would know and they get excited about, that's always, you know, exciting. It makes you feel like, okay, people are, you know, watching, people are excited about this and care about this. So I think those names, I'm always making goals for myself. There's certain personal numbers I'm not going to share that I've wanted to hit. Like, I'm like, I want to get this budget that I've been able to do in the past year. There's so many things. Even just getting paid, period. That was a goal at one point. I was putting money into my own videos and just trying to get out there. I was like, if ever I could just, you know, get actually money into my pocket for this. So there's so many, you know, milestones I've hit along the way that I should, that question made me think about that. I need to appreciate that more because I'm always focused on the next goals I have. But it's the little ones, which I don't even consider little. They're big. If they were a goal of yours and you achieved it, it's big. So, yeah, there's been a few.
Okay.
I think for me, it's one of my dear friends, Diara Kilpatrick. She has a new show coming out called Diara from Detroit. And me and her had been talking about this. I was going to design it. It was totally ready to go, and then it conflicted with the project that I got. And she's my best friend, and I couldn't do it. But in turn, I was able to come on as kind of like a tone setter. I don't know. She was like, there's not a title for what you're doing right now, but I was able to create a master Bible for the whole show that had influences of what set should look like, what lighting for, it's kind of a film noir feel, what costumes, hair, makeup, like casting, all of it. And so when I got that check, that was really great. Because I felt like that was like a combination of everything that I love doing. It wasn't just accessing the costume piece. It was me being able to use all of my storytelling abilities in that moment. So I'm very proud of that. But I think most importantly, I'm really proud of the beautiful tribe of friends that I have because they work with me professionally. They have known me forever. And they achieve so much on the daily. They over there. You can't feel. And I feel like they're the biggest gift that I've gotten out of any job I've done is like the people that I've met through working, through training, through all of that. And they're the people that lift you up. So take note, because you could be on set. You know, we could be on set and we could end up being friends for life. You know what I mean? You well, never just, know what we can give to each other.
Just quickly, so I actually met Dominique many years ago. I was managing a rap duo called Nola Darling. One of the members is here, yeah. If anyone remembers.
Jack in the building.
And she was styling them, and we were doing videos, and she was doing all the looks, and she was killing it. So we were really lucky. I mean, obviously everyone was super talented. Look where everyone is now, but we had an incredible, you guys had such an incredible collective of creatives around you. So we were making some dope videos and the styling was on point. It was sick. And yeah, it was a time. It was a time.
Ahead of our time.
So yes, KJ.
I would say, you know, as someone that doesn't have a job that can be easily described. It was even worse with my family. So my grandfather would be like, so what do you do again now? And so to finally hear what God was saying when he was like, I need you to write a book. I'm like, no, I'm not an author. Like, I like to hem my clients up in the studio and I like to yell, which is why I can't sing anymore. But, and I didn't think that that was transferable to pages. And so then I just said, well, even if you just write something every day, like by the time you finish, you will have finished and completed a book. And so I think to be able to call myself an author, but then have Rolling Stones magazine do a feature that my grandfather can read and now have a better understanding that I do have a real job and that my family can see. And then I would say lastly, it is probably being able to work with the Nas's of two generations to see the trajectory of Lil Nas going from obscurity to notoriety and being a part of the beginning when I would give him all of these different like scenarios and lessons. I'm like, I need you to sing Old Town Road like you're chasing birds. He's like, what do you want from me? And now to see him on stage and on tour, it just warms my heart and it lets me know that all the work has not been in vain. And then to take someone like the iconic Nas, who could have really rested on his past laurels, but he was preparing for his very first headlining show at the Garden. He had never headlined before in his life, and he was like, yo, KJ, I need a little help. And then to just, for him to trust me, you know, because he was seated and I was standing, and when I get into it, I don't know if you'll call me the next day, but I'm in it. And I'm like, yo, you can't be dropping moments. You're the only messenger we got. He's like, all right, sis, all right. And for him to take that information and like, and really use it and then to see him on stage. So it's like, it's just a beautiful just process to watch in studio, to see what they've retained, to see what translates, and then to see what they make their own, and knowing that I was just a little part of that is an accomplishment.
I want to go back to what she said about... as far as like you were talking about being an author, right? And I feel like sometimes as creatives, we judge our creativity before the world can judge it, right? And so I started to notice, I was like, man, you know, I'm trying to do these songs, da da da. And I was shutting down my creativity by judging it before the creativity could even have life itself. And so stop judging yourself in the creative moment. And one thing I learned from B for sure, and I was telling her A&R this, but nothing is ever wrong. You just have to work it until it's right. Like those songs, like, you know, it was a process. And to see it from beginning to end, her process, I was like, okay, like, nothing is ever wrong. You just have to rework it. So let the creativity be what it's going to be, and then you make your judgments after.
And we often dismiss based on time, right? I did that so long ago. I'm a new me. I've evolved. And because someone asked me, do you have any music that you can send for a project we're working on? I was like, oh, no. Let me write you something new. They're like, oh, we don't have time for your evolution. And so, you know, and so I just had to send them the work. And it ended, and it was work that I dismissed. It was work that, you know, I figured was no longer, like, viable. And I think it was just such an emotional song that I was like, I've moved on. But it's still new for other people. Like, your work transcends time. And it ended up in Queen Sugar. And I'm only saying that because I want you to know, like, go back. And anything you have dismissed, anything that you have left incomplete, go back and finish it. Your job is not to judge the work. Your job is to complete the task of the creative process.
To build off of that, even the song Thick on Renaissance, Hit-Boy said he did that beat 8 years ago. And I remember that time that we were working, I remember hearing that beat. And she held on to that beat for like 8 years. 8 years. So, like she said, don't judge it.
Yeah. And by the way, you can keep taking the mic as many times as you want. Because I'm sure, or I hope folks are taking notes, because lots of gems are being dropped. So yes, whatever comes to mind that you want to share, we are taking it in. So my next question, this brings me to my next question. So with all of the work that you're doing, the different artists you're working with the clients, all these assignments, what keeps you inspired and how do you keep your ideas fresh?
Oh, that's a good question. I think what keeps me inspired personally is just spending time with my family. Like, it's the small stuff for me. I just reached a point in my life, I don't really like chase the industry. I don't really chase those things. Like, they come. in placements and all that type of stuff, but just spending time with my family, the things, the intangibles, the things that money can't buy. And what's the second part of that question?
How do you keep your ideas fresh?
Ooh, how do I keep my ideas fresh? I don't know. I just always have my phone. Like, I'm always researching something. I'm the researcher. I'm like the person, I'm like, girl, this is what everybody wearing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when I'm in it, I'm in it. Or like, you know, I don't know, just staying on top of like, you know, just the slang and, you know, all that, the jargon and all that type of stuff. I think that's just how I keep my ideas fresh and just listening to new things. Not necessarily like the things that's popping, but I'm digging in the crates, listening, finding all the gems. So that's just how I stay inspired. I really stay inspired by like the people on the come up. Yeah. Like those are the people that inspire me.
I love that.
Yeah, I think real life is always the best. If you are talking to, like you said, your family, and there's a story that you're just naturally into, you know, whatever happened in their day or whatever's going on in their life, most likely other people are going to be naturally interested as well. That doesn't mean you have to do exactly that way, but you should pay attention to those moments that are already around you. Like, you know, when you're talking to your girlfriends, whatever you're going through with your mate, whatever the case may be, I think real life is what people relate to the most. If we are here to serve a purpose, to help in entertainment, healing processes, education, then you take from, you know, what really educated you and what you're truly going through or what someone you know is going through. So, yeah.
Michelle, did you do that Usher and Kiki video? Speaking of.
They took that from real life. They were like, we're going to take this literal. No, I mean, hey.
I'm just
kidding. I get it. If people are interested and, you know, like I said, it's something you're really going through, I've learned to be more vulnerable in that way. You might think it's not interesting to you, but then you have to think. It interests you in that moment. It caught your attention in that moment. So, yeah, real life scenarios, I think, are the best ones.
I love that.
Yeah, and I think, like, understanding that the inspiration, you don't have to force it. Like, literally, like, just me curating my space, right, doing my morning routine, I'll, like, okay, the other day, I just moved. I sat. We have this little, like, weird Ethiopian mattress in the corner. And I sat in that corner, and I looked at the living room, and I had never seen it from that perspective. And, like, I was like, oh, this is a beautiful space. Like, I can see it now. The couch is going to go here, and the, you know, and then I could start putting together the vibe. But I think that routine, those little rituals that you do, whether it's being on the bus or the train or, you know, stuck in traffic, you know, going to a farmer's market, letting yourself brainstorm and get lost in your thoughts is like the best time and the most important time, you know? And I think we just sleep on that sometimes. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think a theme I'm hearing is being present, listening, observing.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things we're all capable of, but we don't always allow ourselves to do those things. But so much can come out of it when we do. So,
yeah.
KJ.
But I love a thrift store too. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know, the hunt,
I'm with you.
The
hunt
for something. And then you find this amazing treasure and you make up a whole story about how it got into this world.
Yeah.
It's fucking awesome. Sorry.
Feel you. I think my greatest fear is trying to do my job with old information. So I'm always just trying to look for new classes. I started taking a motion capturing class, which led me to being an avatar on Roblox. So I'm always just trying to figure out other ways and how to coach my artist in a way that they can tell a story where sound is the bonus. So that's kind of like my new direction, and I'm just trying to stay fresh in that. And then I think in terms of keeping other ideas fresh, I would have to say that my niece Taylor, shout out to Taylor, and she's here from Jersey, and she'd be like, nope, there's TikTok dances for that. Or I mean, she just keeps me fresh. I worked with an artist today, Kani, and she showed me just all of the dances that were available. So it's just really, you know, staying open. You know, it may not be your thing, but it is a thing somewhere to somebody.
Absolutely.
And so I just try to stay and utilize the kids.
The youth. Yes.
If I could add on, can I add on that to that?
Yes.
As well, I was going to say, like, just let the child in us live. Like, we be at home. I probably, like, we soap, like, poised. When we at home, it's like, yo, you wouldn't know who we are. Like, we screaming, running through the house. It's just like, you know, I don't know. I think that's just something that adds to our creativity. Like, even if you, at some point, we're going to release a documentary. And y'all will see all the BTS events, okay, us in the studio. And y'all like, how do y'all get work done? You know what I mean? It's a, we just always having fun. I don't know. I think that's just a big part of what we do.
That's part of the work, though.
Yeah, that is a huge, huge part. Even the Bible talks about being childlike. That's when you inherit the kingdom of God. When you are childlike, not childish, but childlike as in, yo, I'm out here having fun. And the Bible talks about the kingdom of God is at hand. It's right here. It's everything. And it's exactly what they just said. Being present, adding to your Rolodex of information, and just be in the moment. Be in the moment.
All right. So two more questions, just so that we know how we're doing on timing. So the next question is, this is going to be your moment to talk your talk. So what is your secret sauce? It's your moment. You can talk that, you know what, that ish.
Ooh, I don't know, I think I
feel like you guys have been describing it, yeah, but just to hear it from you.
I mean, I just think I'm cool. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just,
okay.
Ain't cool in a way of just like, I just be chilling, you know? I don't really take things too seriously. Like, you know, if I'm being super transparent, though, like, I went through a time where, like, I had anxiety really, really bad, and I was just, I don't know, I was just letting everything stress me and just worried about the future, living in the past, you know? And so I think that, I don't know, I sat in my seat, you know, I recognized who I am, you know? And I think when I did that, the doors opened up. So it's just, I think my sauce is just, you know, I'm comfortable with who I am, I'm confident. In a real subtle way.
Wait, I love that you said living in your future, worried about your past.
Yeah, like living in
that
the future.
That sounds like some lyrics like, already, right there.
Yeah, came from.
Yes.
There's so many elements, like you said, we've been talking about it the whole time, of what we do and pieces that make our work ours. I think one thing that I like to do specifically when it comes to work is fantasize. So a lot of times, if you know, like I said, we'll take these stories or our friends' stories or our stories, but then take it up a notch. That is one thing that I do a lot. Like, okay, you know, I've never thrown a man in the trunk and set the car on fire, but for a music video, maybe in my heart, I thought about that a couple times, so I am going to put it on screen. So that is, you know, whatever is in my heart, whatever those things that seem too crazy or like, you can't do that, or, you know, it will never happen. It will never happen. I will never murder anyone. So yeah, you put it into your art. You know, keep pulling from that. Keep pulling from those things that are, you know, like I said, that it's could never be done in real life. So that's one of the things that I do continuously.
Not being afraid to take it there. Yeah. Yeah. Fearless.
Yeah. I think my secret sauce is definitely theater training, like, period. Okay? Because when you're doing a play or a musical, you have a box. And I remember when we were in school, we had a black box. And we had to place each, we had to do models for like the set for a play. And we had to place things in there, and every single thing that we placed on the set had to be justified in the text. You can't make a choice that's frivolous or eye candy or, oh, this is dope, so this is gonna be tight. You know, like, it has to be intentional, and it has to be just driven by the movement of the play, the statement of the play, right? So when you approach any project like that, then all your choices come from this rooted place. And I feel like it's not always easy to explain that to other people, especially when their intentions are, but she looks fat in that. You know what I mean? You're like, that's not what this scene is about, right? So I think across the board, my ability to focus in in that way and strip things down to what has to be there when we're telling this story, no matter what the medium is like a blessing. The theater, go see a play. It's wonderful. Like, only now am I working on a play because it's a strike. I haven't done a play, like, since college, I feel like. And so
it's good you have that option that you can take it back to the roots. Yeah. KJ?
I would say that my secret sauce is energy and empathy. It's important that I handle my artists with care. I think you made reference to that in the podcast. I never know what an artist has experienced before they got to me, whether that's 5 minutes before, whether that is 5 years before. I always make sure that I disarm them. And I think the other kind of sweet spot to how I'm able to show up, I am perpetually engaging and disengaging with every artist. Everybody needs something different. And the sweet spot has now become that I know what to do in the space between. I know how to unpack it. I do the things that I need to do so I'm not missing moments in a new opportunity because I'm still holding on to the old one. Because it is an emotional contract. Like, I'm not prescribing you anything. You know, a lot of times I'm allowing you to harness my energy until you can figure out your own, or harness my story until you can figure out your own. And so if I'm not careful, then everybody's drained. And so I think my sweetest spot is understanding what to do in the moments between, and understanding that everybody has a story. And my job is to help them tell it as explicitly as possible. And ain't nobody gonna do it like I do it. Ain't nobody had a 360-degree perspective of performance, you know? And so if you did, you may be able to say the same things, but it'll never be done in the way that I can do it, because I've already been qualified for it. I was qualified at birth. He don't qualify the call, he qualifies the called, right?
Hello. Preach.
So I know this is my assignment. I know this is what I'm meant to do. And when you know that, you walk in with a different posture. You know, I'm not asking you permission to be here. I've already, again, been told that this is where. I never think that I'm assigned to someone for the sake of just coaching. I always know it's beneath that. It's more than that. And so that's how I walk in the door. And you ain't going to get that with nobody else. I'm just saying. Okay.
I think we have... You want to add to this?
Yeah. Just to sum that up, I feel like you were basically saying pour into your power. Like, what are the things that make you feel powerful? Like, pour into that. And that's where it is. I love that. I love that.
Wow. Okay. Oh.
Okay, my bad. Okay, I didn't get to go on this one, but what I do feel like, was it give you your inspiration? What is it? What was the question? Makes you feel...
What keeps you inspired, and how do you keep your ideas fresh?
What keeps you inspired? The secret sauce. Yeah. Secret sauce.
What is your secret sauce?
I feel like my secret sauce was finding out that I have Christ energy, right? So in the New Testament, Jesus talks about how you can be a Christ as well. He talks about how powerful you are. The New Testament talks about how we are the heirs of God, if you could see heirs on my hat. And so just figuring out that I was one of them ones. And we all are. We just got to step into our power and go for it. And go for it.
Everyone inspired? Are you all going to go home and work on those projects or go in the studio, create something, whatever it is you do? Okay, I hope so, because I am. So, so this is the last question. So what advice would you give women pursuing your career path or pursuing the careers that you have?
Advice. understand who you are, right? So 12,000 years ago, women were the lead. We was popping. We was the one making the decisions. We had 60 husbands. We were the ones, right? And so I think we have to understand, yes, there's man, but we are the wombed man. So we have just as much power, if not more. We're more creative. We can birth life. That's a blessing. And so even when women give birth, it's like breaking 42 bones at one time. We are so strong. We're so powerful. And so you just got to know, like, I got to be a dog. Like, I have to be a dog. Like, I'm pretty, I'm this, I'm that, I'm cute. But at some point, like, I just got to be a dog in my energy. I have to. And so, and find other women to work with. Like, that's been such a blessing for us. Like, if we didn't have each other, we wouldn't be where we are, literally. So I would say that.
Being a woman is a superpower. I see it as a superpower. There are people who might make you feel otherwise, depending on what room you're in. You know, you might feel intimidated or like the outsider, or like you shouldn't be there, but it's actually the opposite. So you have to know that there is a certain empathy we have. There is a way we view things. There is an unspoken code that only another woman would know. And when you see it as a plus and not a negative, you know, whatever anyone might tell you, I think that's the biggest thing. We have a story to tell. And then on top of that, you know, we're still our own individuals. So it's like those extra superpowers you got on top of your own personal story. I love it. I love being a woman. I think, like you said, working with women has definitely helped me a lot. In my industry, there's commissioners and, you know, artists. Working with female artists is some of my favorites to work with. So, yeah, see it as a plus. Tap into the power. Tap into those things that people make you feel like maybe are not a strength, and they absolutely are a strength.
100%.
As a costume designer, you know, you mentioned service earlier, and I come at the craft from a service place, right? I mean, literally, I'm on my knees, on my hands and knees, helping assemble and get people into clothes and trying to look at things differently. And I feel like there's something that's so humbling about that, but matched with the kind of rocky industry that we're in, it's tough because you want to be sensitive and present in fittings, but then you have to be aggressive and strong and forceful in this other meeting, and then you have to be, oh, I'm just listening over here, and then you have to, you know what I mean, multitask over here. There's so many different faces and masks that we have to wear. And so I'm really trying to, you know, figure out which of those really service me for the long term. Because there's definitely a mask that I wore for a long time where I can just get it done and fuck everybody else, right? But that will not service you for the long haul. So really taking the time to be able to make the right choices and, you know what I mean, speak to people properly and not sacrifice parts of yourself along the way, you know? I think it's a bigger thing than what I'm touching on right now, but I'm starting to dip into that.
Yeah. I think that's so relatable. I think that's something that we all can relate to in our roles. I mean, what you're describing is something that just being there and, like you said, being sensitive, wanting the person you're working with to trust you, feel comfortable, but at the same time, wanting to see your vision through, or believing in your vision and wanting, you know, who you're working with to trust you. You know, I think that balance, treading that,
it's really
that
like
dance, it's tough. It's very difficult.
The nuances of being a leader.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Especially when the world has told you, like, you?
Yeah.
No.
And that's the
You know what I mean?
Right.
So then when you are in this leadership position, how to take that voice and throw it out, right?
Yeah.
And really be your authentic self. It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beyond the craft. You can be amazing at what you do, but that's not the only factor that's going to determine whether you're going to be successful or whether you're actually going to be able to see what you're doing, whether you're going to be able to see it through. It's all these other factors that come into play. And those are the things that can be difficult to navigate. So again, I do think that hearing it from other people, I think it's valuable. It's good to know that you're not the only one, you know, and also being in spaces where you can observe other people helps. So, because we all experience it, right? So KJ, you are the last.
I would say, to leave a few words, to make sure that you count up all your wins. Like, no win should be left behind. The small ones, the ones that nobody, you know, validated for you, like, go collect all your wins, the ones that are just lying dormant, waiting for you to claim. It does something for your soul. It emboldens you. I would also say, make your own announcements. Like, someone told me that because there's no IP on my work, he was like, there's no IP on energy. So you've got to stay in front of your work. And so there are times I'm like, well, I don't want to beat people over the head. No, make your own announcements, because if you're not doing it, then it won't be said. And it's okay. It's not, you know, people say, well, I don't want to brag, or it's whatever. Like, you are a walking resume. You know, you can do it in a way that finesses and, you know, just tells your story. Like, you should always leave a room with more information than you came in with sharing more information on yourself than you came in with. It should never be that we leave the room the same. I think that's all.
That Make your is own sound advice. Yes, I love that.
And get in flight. If there's something you've been thinking about, if there's an idea that you've had, go back to it. All you got to do is get in flight. And in flight means one thing. You know, it doesn't have to be a major thing. It doesn't have to be meteoric for you to just start. Whatever it is that has been on your conscience that you have prayed about and we ain't done no action, right? But we thought about it. Get in flight. Take the first step. And I promise God will meet you on the other side of it.
I love it. So does anyone have any final words? No.
I want to meet everyone in this room.
Well, I think we'll have a little. I don't know. I have no idea what time it is. So I don't know if we
have
time.
Questions?
Okay. So we have about 15 minutes to mingle. So, yeah. So I'm just going to close out. I just want to say thank you again. You're all incredibly busy and doing so much, and I'm so grateful that you were all able to come. I have two episodes up, one that I've done with Dominique and one that I've done with KJ. So if you want to listen to those episodes, we go more in depth with each of them about their career journeys. So, and I'm hoping that I'll have an episode with you guys and with you as well. So please tune in. It's Searle Lab Podcast, and it's on all the DSPs, anywhere where you could hear podcasts. Hopefully, I'll do more of these. This is my first one. And also, I guess I should leave it open to any questions. Maybe 5 minutes for anyone who might have some questions. I feel like there's probably going to be so many, but I'm going to maybe take like 3 questions. So if you have any, raise your hand really fast. Oh, okay. Did they answer everything?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Can we give a shout out to Nicole? She has hired me before as well.
Yes.
Women hire women. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you, Nicole.
Thank you, Soul House, also, for allowing me to have this here. You guys were so great to work with. So hopefully we can do it again. All right. Well, that's it. Thank you again for coming out. I hope you enjoyed. Oh, yeah, so...